Welcome to the Geriatric Journal Club, featuring practical discussions on the front line of PALTC issues that you wrestle with every day. References for this podcast and links to previous recordings can be found at paltc.org/journalclub. Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post Acute Care.
Everyone, welcome to the first Geriatric Journal Club of 2021. Today we're going to talk about monoclonal antibody treatments in the long-term care setting. We have Dr. Eric France, the Chief Medical Officer for CDPHE. He's going to give an overview and we're going to include some information about Warp Speed's new program, Speed, that's trying to shunt a large number of the doses to long-term care pharmacies for use in long-term care. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Gom and then Dr. France. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today.
Oh, that's easy. I'm just going to turn it over to Eric. So, Eric, you're on.
Hey, thanks, Greg. And thank you, everybody, for making time for me. This is your first Journal Club of the new year. And I was really wanting to get the word out about these neutralizing monoclonal antibody therapies that are now available to people in the U.S. It was, I have to admit, news to me when on November 10th, I think I heard a new emergency use authorization, EUA, for bamlanivimab, which was this name for this monoclonal antibody. And I thought, well, that's interesting. At some point, I better start learning more about it. And then the next day was like, oh, Eric, HHS wants to send the state 1,600 doses. Where do you want them to go? And I'm thinking, oh, well, this is, better learn more about this very quickly because these doses have been purchased by our federal tax dollars and should be available to people in the state of Colorado. And so, indeed, I did learn more about bamlanivimab. And then there's a second cocktail monoclonal antibody that we call Regeneron, which is its brand name. But because I have a hard enough time remembering bamlanivimab as a name, the other two, casimivimab and something else, I just go with Regeneron. And these are monoclonal antibody therapies that have been studied. I think of them as infusions of an antibody into a person early in their illness. And these antibodies' job is to bind with the virus. And the ultimate impact first is to reduce viral load. So if there's just a natural progression of increasing viral loads in an ill person, having antibody there now that can neutralize it will reduce that viral load. And with the reduced viral load, the assumption is that then the course of illness will be less. We heard President Trump talk about how wonderful his antibody cocktail was. He received Regeneron, and of course, he seemed to be better in 2 days. And in general, these monoclonal antibody therapies have shown that they will reduce a viral load in the first 5 to 7 days. The person receiving it will describe fewer symptoms. That persons have fewer medically attended visits. That might be a telehealth visit. That might be a clinic visit, emergency room. And then persons receiving it have lower hospitalization rates. There is a general theme of the findings. And I describe it that way because the findings are early. These are phase two trials of 275, I think, were in the Regeneron study, and 400 and some were in the bamlanivimab study. And the primary outcomes that those studies were designed for were to look at viral load. Indeed, with the bamlanivimab study, the goal was, what is the change in viral load from day one to day 11? And let's randomly assign folks to get it as a placebo or as the true treatment. And by day 11, it turned out that both arms of them had low viral loads. And so there was really no effect seen from bamlanivimab. And they concluded like, well, we kind of chose the wrong outcome because it seems like everybody's viral loads are down by day 11. However, they said when we look at secondary outcomes, we see that viral loads were lower by day five, day seven, that people expressed fewer symptoms, had lower symptom scores. And they looked at hospitalizations and found that in the treatment arm, there was some 1.3%, I think, or 1.6% that were hospitalized by day 29. Whereas in the placebo arm, it was 6.3%. So these were actually hospitalized or emergency room visits. So a lumped end outcome followed. And remember too, this is a randomized trial and that people were blinded. The people that were involved were blinded with status during them. So while the numbers were small in terms of total enrollment, this was a statistically significant difference between the two arms on hospitalization. Next, the Regeneron study came out and it looked at 275 people. And this was really an interim look in a larger trial, a longer term trial. They were doing a first look in to see what they would see. Again, they were looking at the decrease in viral loads from days one through day seven. That was their primary endpoint. They had a secondary endpoint, which was clinical oriented, and they describe it as any medically attended visit. And again, they found between a 50 and 60% reduction in medically attended visits for the treatment arm compared to the placebo arm. In their New England Journal article, it's unfortunate that you can't really tease out which of the, were these were just telehealth visits or were they hospitalizations. Nevertheless, you do see this ongoing theme, being treated early in an illness with a monoclonal neutralizing antibody seems to reduce the viral load, symptoms, visits, and hospitalizations. And if you remember about the FDA and their licensing, they consider these two therapies investigational drugs even today. And so I try and talk about them as investigational drugs since they haven't been licensed. And when you have, of course, an EUA, you are really just saying that there's a serious illness out there. There's some efficacy studies been done. The benefit seems to outweigh the harms and there's no other option. Those are the requirements that the FDA looks at when they say, we will give this investigational drug an EUA to be used. And so they did that for both of these based on the general things I spoke of. The other, of course, important piece of this is that for neither of these studies were there any serious adverse events, and there were no issues with anaphylaxis or other problems associated with being exposed to these novel neutralizing monoclonal antibodies. Questions have arisen about their use in general. These are antibodies that are built around novel receptor binding protein areas of the spike protein. And so if you have a variant, will it some in the COVID disease in a community, will they still work? Too early to say. The Regeneron people will say ours is better because we have two different antibodies in our cocktail and our competitor, bamlanivimab, is only one. You know, again, no science to back that up, only theoretically saying that if you have more antibodies with different binding sites, you may have more proven effectiveness. Way too early to compare one versus the other. And unfortunately, it's too early to say would bamlanivimab and Regeneron work less well, be less effective if the predominant virus in our community becomes one of the variants. We don't know that to be the case. The other question that comes up with these is, I have somebody who is in my skilled nursing facility and three days ago, they were vaccinated with their first dose of COVID. After a week, they now actually are presenting with symptoms and we test them and they have COVID. And again, maybe it's a 78-year-old, they have diabetes, they have hypertension. Do I give them this infusion? Because having that circulating monoclonal antibody may interfere with the second dose of the COVID vaccine. And we do think in general, the recommendation from the CDC is that if you've been treated with one of these monoclonal antibody therapies, you should wait 90 days before you receive your vaccine. In the specific instance that I've spoken of just now, where someone's already gotten their first dose, had the unfortunate history of now being positive for COVID, and you're thinking, should I treat them? The recommendation would be, yes, go ahead and treat them, because the possibility of serious hospitalization in the next 10 days is higher in these populations, and it would be more prudent to use an antibody therapy that we think would reduce hospitalizations for them, and then have to wait the 90 days before giving them their second dose of the vaccine. And even then, they've been ill with COVID. So to a degree, they have their own native natural immunity that we think would last for at least 90 days after that illness, and therefore not needing that second dose of vaccination at that time. We've been working at the state to distribute these doses. And I'm sorry to say that our general effort has been unsuccessful. Don't know that I want to quite say it's a failure. We've, since November 10th, have maybe 300 people that have received the infusions. And this program to distribute bamlanivimab and these monoclonal antibodies looks very much like the distribution effort with the vaccines. There are actually two tracks. There's an HHS track, like there is with CVS and Walgreens to vaccinate long-term care facilities. And then the rest of the population is getting vaccinated through work of the state. So too with the monoclonal antibodies. I've been working over the last 6-8 weeks to build the statewide program. And we now have, I think, 19 different centers across the state that will do these infusion therapies for persons in the state. In the meantime, Operation Warp Speed announced maybe 3 weeks ago that they, because there's such poor use and poor uptake of this antibody therapy across the nation, they would start working directly with long-term care pharmacies and long-term care residencies to get their product to you should you need it and want it. So why has it been such a failure so far? Failure in the sense that we're not going through thousands every week. First off, because the people who qualify are people who have mild to moderate COVID, who are outpatient, not hospitalized. If you're hospitalized, you can't get it. If you require oxygen because of your COVID, you can't get it. If you have baseline oxygen use, you have COVID, and your oxygen use has gone up because of your COVID, but you're outpatient, you can't get it. So any kind of worsening oxygen requirements means you can't get it. So this is truly an outpatient therapy, and it's meant to be used per the EUA requirements for a group of people who, should they get COVID, would be at high risk for developing severe COVID. Over 65, BMI over 35, diabetes, persons over 55 with hypertension, COPD, and so on. There's a list in the EUA of who qualifies. But the 52-year-old with asthma who has a BMI of 32 actually doesn't qualify per the EUA for this. So they're pretty clear about who qualifies. And those requirements are just the people who were enrolled in the trials. So they are, you know, trying to stay within the science as we know it when they say these are the people that can get it. Your populations are predominantly 65 and older, or probably over 55 with serious medical conditions. So many of your folks would qualify. And so this program is called SPEED, and I should really learn what that acronym stands for. It is through Operation Warp Speed, and they will ship as many doses as you would like to your pharmacy to be infused at your skilled nursing facilities. The one requirement is that you are able to manage a severe allergic reaction or a severe infusion reaction at your site. Many home infusion companies will also be offered the opportunity, and it's felt that they know how to manage home infusions and reactions and are fine. And so it's probably not different than what we're expected in terms of being ready for anaphylaxis with our vaccination programs. You have to have that same thing. These vaccines are free. I'm sorry, these antibodies are free, these treatments, and there you can charge Medicare, Medicaid, health plans, an administration fee for the infusion itself. The infusions take an hour, and there's an expected 1 hour period by which you will oversee the patient to make sure that they're not having any reactions. I'd like to ask for approval to show my screen, if I can, please. Thanks, Travis. I just want to show you that, again, remember that there are these two tracks. You guys have special status. Like, you can get as much as you want coming to you, to your facilities. All you need to do is ask. The rest of us in the state, if we want it, need to go to the CDPHE COVID-19 treatments website. So there's a website at the Department of Public Health and Environment that will talk about how this is available to you. And I'm still waiting to show my screen, but once I can and I get that notice, I'll show you simple Google COVID-19 Colorado treatments will bring up our webpage. And that webpage shows you who's qualified to receive it in, for the general population. It will also show you a map at the bottom that shows you the sites. It has a section that if you're a provider, like an infusion center or those folks can sign up through it. So,
managing your patient's needs across multiple specialties is increasingly important, but also an increasingly challenging task. U.S. Post-Acute Care now offers clinical staffing solutions not only for primary care medicine, but also for behavioral health, chronic care management, and telehealth, bringing you a more comprehensive solution for your patients and your facilities. Now more than ever, your patients need you in so many ways. Let U.S. Post-Acute Care help you deliver more complete, quality care. For more information, visit us at uspostacutecare.com.
Just to orient you real quick again, it's colorado.gov and it's COVID-19 treatments. And it talks about these therapies. There's an FAQ, how many doses do we get, and how do I get it? And while this is interesting for you, it doesn't apply to you, right? Because you have that special green light through speed, through Operation Warp Speed, to get your own doses. This is for the rest of us. But nevertheless, it provides you some good background information. And here you see at the state level what our map looks like for providing the different sites. And the ones that have a question mark are ones where we're still finalizing their doses. But so if you have a colleague who's an internist and they're having patients in Fort Collins and they're wondering about where they can go for these treatments, they can look here and find these sites and send their patients there. The other thing that's unique about this site that we have for the state is that when the provider does it, we want them to answer some questions just to be sure the patients meet the EUA requirements. And we also have it set up so that we can use a lottery or random allocator tool if we ever got to the place where there was more demand than there was supply of either the product or infusion center seats. We haven't had that experience, so your chances are 100% that if you go through the state using this system, that you would get it if you qualified. There could be a day in a month where we don't have enough, and then we would change the odds accordingly so that everybody had a fair chance of getting it. So so what can we do for you all? Well, I've been working with Dr. Gom and Dr. Leslie Eber to identify who in the state would be interested for your skilled nursing facilities. And do you have the capability of doing these infusions? And if it's yes, I do, and yes, I want it, you know, then I'm happy to help broker it. Certainly if you Google speed monoclonal antibody therapies, you may find direct contacts as well. But we're working hard with Operation Warp Speed and our own long-term care pharmacies to try and make sure that everybody's connected, because it's readily available to you all. You do not need to use that random allocator tool. That is only for the state system. It is not for you guys. So day one and out the door. I think it's worth having out the door, and I can't think of a more important group to receive it than your residents.
Without Eric, are there any storage requirements for the antibody?
I don't think it's anything in particular, but I don't know. I haven't heard anything unusual in that regard. So
yeah. So we've got a pharmacist on. My guess is the pharmacy would send it to you and you use it right away. Eric Wood. Eric, can you answer that question?
Yeah, I'll double check. But last time I looked into it, the pharmacy would reconstitute it. And then it would be administered after that. So it should be delivered, reconstituted. But I'll follow up for sure.
We do have a lot of experience here. Sorry, Mike, but we do have a lot of experience with pharmacists at Banner, SCL, UC Health. And if there's ever any questions, I'm sure we can help in that regard too. Mike?
Thanks, Eric. As you know, I'm a hospice medical director in Northern Colorado, and one of our infusion companies has obtained about 200 doses of the bamlanivimab. They're calling it BAM-BAM. I love that. Makes it easier. Given out 6 or 8 books, and they've contacted our hospice to see if we would have patients that we would want to get the treatment. And I'm kind of wondering about your view on that. And these are people who are on hospice. We expect them to die within 6 months, though I could picture a scenario where it could be beneficial for them and for the nursing home that they live in. So I'm wondering what your thoughts on that, and also quick wondering too, there's no chance that they would get placebo at this point, correct?
No chance of a placebo, good call out. And the impression I have with my conversations with the folks at HHS is they bought hundreds of thousands of these and they just can't get them used. And they know hospitalization rates are gonna be up over the next 3 months. So if you have somebody who's on hospice and they look as if they should be have a full life for the next 2 or 3 months, and we can keep them out of the hospital in the next 2 or 3 months by giving them this therapy, they would say, go for it. There may be other situations where you would think that maybe, if not flu, maybe COVID is a way of a compassionate illness. I'm not sure how to say that, right?
The old man's friend.
Old man's friend.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Eric.
Yeah. Other questions?
So, Eric, yeah. I have two other questions that have come to me. One is, okay, I'm out in rural Colorado. We got a small nursing home. How difficult? Okay, so I order this and the pharmacy reconstitutes it and they drop it off. But don't I need special equipment, oversight? You know, how difficult is it? Or is it as simple as just throwing up an IV bag and, you know, and running it in?
Yeah, I think it's as simple as throwing up an IV bag and running it in over an hour and being capable of dealing with somebody who's having an infusion reaction, yep. Which that would be it. So that's probably not unlike any other medication, but I haven't seen anything that requires anything special in that regard. Okay. And I've heard too that rural settings have been good about using this. And so they don't have a lot of ICU beds and hospital beds, and sometimes maybe they have more access today to kind of do this work, whereas other places might be a bit more overwhelmed in the metro center taking care of patients. The other pushback I've had is that we don't have the staff to do this. We have too many people in the hospital with COVID. We can't do this. And we can't find a safe place to do this because our infusion center takes care of our oncology patients and our immunosuppressed patients. And we don't bring in a COVID positive person into that room. So for some, it took a little work to say, okay, we're gonna bring you in the back door and we're going to go back over to this room. And you had to kind of work out how you were going to do this for some of these settings.
Another question, Dr. Francis, it came up in the chat, is maybe you could just give a quick advice for someone has patients in an assisted living facility and there's a COVID outbreak and looking for some assistance. What might be the next steps for them to try to get access?
Yeah, that's a good question. They don't, of course, have medical directors or nursing staff. And so I suppose there are two options that come to mind. Just like anybody else, an individual in assisted living could ask their doctor, I have COVID, it's mild, I'd like to get the therapy, or the ALRs could be encouraging their residents to connect with their providers, their doctors, and have them go to one of these centers, like any other patient in the state of Colorado. I don't know, do home infusion companies ever go to an ALR, or is that really more in the skilled nursing side of things? It can be. Look, I saw Michael nodding his head. So it could be too that the SPEED program will build relationships with some of these home infusion centers, and maybe the ALR could have a relationship with some of those and they would be able to come out and do infusions. That feels a little early because I don't know how much SPEED has built it out with the home infusion centers.
Yeah, I think some of the infusion centers, at least one up here, also works with a home health agency, so their nurses can take the infusion out and give it potentially. So I think it is possible.
Perfect.
There was another question in the chat that said, they believe in the studies patients had at least some clinical symptoms. Would you give treatment to a completely asymptomatic but high risk patient?
Yes.
And another question in the chat was, is response to anaphylaxis, do you use epi and a call to 911, and is that enough?
Yeah, I'd probably look to other medical directors. As a public health doctor and a pediatrician, it's not often I'm worried about 75-year-olds with these kinds of reactions, but I imagine it's epi and it's Benadryl, H2, and be able to give more fluids and call 911, measure blood pressures, listen to respiratory rates.
Doesn't the EUA requirement for mild to moderate COVID preclude the use for prophylaxis?
Yes. So you have to be COVID positive, and you have to, and so I don't, if we were talking about prophylaxis, then I apologize, I misspoke. I will call out, you have to have your symptoms within 10 days. So if it's day 12, it's too late.
Yeah, and my understanding, Blaze too, that was looking at the prophylaxis is all but stopped since they got the EUA. Mm-hmm. We were participating here and they just put an end to it.
Seems like a great way of using it though, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially for people that refuse to be vaccinated. And Erica, if I remember on Tuesday, you were saying that administrative fee reimbursement was about $135. Is that?
No, I seem to remember 153 from Medicare. And I could be wrong, but that was kind of early in this. First thing I did was check in with Medicare. They confirmed in Colorado it would be covered. Medicaid confirmed it would be covered. And my conversations with health plan leaders have all suggested it too would be
covered. Then Eric, our appreciation, our thanks to you. If there are other questions, if you don't know how to reach Eric, you know how to reach me and I can reach Eric. And we will go from there and we'll see everybody next month.
Thanks everybody. Thanks Eric.
Thank you.
Just put in the email address of a contact person if it just would show up. There, Elaine Sabian is a project manager.
There we go.
Have that real quick, or send it to Greg, and we'll get any of that answer for you. So, thanks.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care.